Last week, the U.S. Department of Justice announced that it would temporarily suspend support for a legal advice program for detained immigrants, as well as a telephone helpline. It's not the only legal barrier facing those in detention. A new lawsuit claims that federal immigration officials make it difficult for detainees to communicate with their attorneys. The lawsuit filed by the Southern Poverty Law Center names two Georgia detention centers. Lisa Grable is the Southern Poverty Law Center's legal director, and she joins me now from San Antonio. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
And with us on the studio in Atlanta is Atlanta-based immigration attorney Hiba Gallab. She works with detainees in this state. And Hiba, let me start with you. Just before we get into the specifics of this lawsuit, what's the background here? Everybody who's watched television knows that in the normal course of the criminal justice system, someone who's under arrest or in detention, they have a right to an attorney. I get arrested. The cops have to let me call my lawyer. And if I don't have one, they have to provide one for me at no cost. What are the rights of people who are being detained on immigration offenses or alleged immigration offenses? What are their rights to an attorney?
Yes, thank you for having me, Adam. This is actually the core of the issue. The U.S. Supreme Court has held for decades now that immigration proceedings are civil and not criminal. So there is no constitutional right to appointed counsel. And a detainee or an immigrant in removal proceedings, they're supposedly there to determine eligibility to remain in this country. It's not a punishment for unlawful entry. It's ironic. It's unfortunate, though, because oftentimes what happens is that the same person might be who may be detained and facing, you know, a night in jail for a minor misdemeanor, but because it's a criminal charge, they're entitled to legal assistance. But if they're facing, immigration violation, consequences are lifetime exile. We're talking about a lot of times we're dealing with clients that are facing very treacherous situations back where they could be deported. And so this is the reality of the situation. They're not, they don't have a right to appointed counsel. They do have a right to representation, but that's on their own expense, of course.
So practically speaking, though, aside from what the Supreme Court says, but practically speaking, what ends up usually happening? Do people who are being detained for immigration offenses end up getting a lawyer most of the time?
Most immigration detainees are not able to, mainly because of the financial burden it would bear on them, because these are very complex cases. It's very oftentimes just challenging. These are a lot of respondents already have, many of them a financial, constraint anyway. They have lack financial resources to hire private counsel, even if they can financially afford it. Sometimes if they're detained, it's just simply logistically difficult. If they don't have contacts on the outside, then how are they supposed to do the research that it would take to find a credible, competent immigration attorney to represent you if you're detained?
Now, let me turn to Lisa Grable with the Southern Poverty Law Center. You are suing federal immigration officials and naming two Georgia detention centers, immigration detention centers in particular, in that lawsuit. What are you alleging?
Well, the problems that Hiba described are exactly why the Southern Poverty Law Center started the Southeast Immigrant Freedom Project about a year ago in April of 2017. This is because the representation rate at some of the detention centers in the Southeast, including the two detention centers we've named in Georgia, are even lower than average around the country. Only 6%, for example, of the immigrant detainees at the Stewart Detention Center in Lumpkin, Georgia, were represented by counsel before SPLC opened this direct representation project. And what we did was bring lawyers and open offices in the towns where these small towns where these detention centers are located. But what we found, even when we brought volunteer attorneys from all over the country who were willing to come give of their time to increase the representation rate in these southern detention facilities, was that they cannot get access to their clients. For example, the Stewart Detention Center, the one in Lumpkin, has a capacity of 1,900 detainees, but only 3 attorney visitation rooms. In contrast, the nearest county jail has about 19 visitation rooms for a population of up to 1,000 detainees. So it's very difficult for attorneys attorneys to access their clients, they have to wait hours on end to get into the attorney visitation rooms. And then even once they get inside, the rooms are divided by heavy plexiglass, and the attorneys have to speak to their clients through a closed-circuit telephone, which becomes functionally impossible once you add an interpreter because many detainees are not fluent in English. We've asked to be allowed to bring in telephones, offered to have ICE examine the telephones to ensure the numbers are limited to interpretation services, but that hasn't been permitted. So we brought suit, alleging a violation both of our right, SPLC's right, to fulfill its mission by representing these detainees and of the detainees' right to access counsel and the courts.
We contacted the federal agencies named in the suit. They've said, not surprisingly, that as a matter of policy, they don't comment on pending litigation. ICE, however, did put a little addendum onto their rejection to our request for comment, where they said, in general, ICE's highly trained law enforcement professionals adhere to the Department of Homeland Security's mission to carry out their duties in accordance with federal law and agency policy. ICE respects the rights of all aliens, their term, not mine. ICE respects the rights of all aliens in removal proceedings to hire and or consult with a lawyer of their choice and has policies in place to ensure that aliens may do so to the extent required by federal law. Hiba Gallup, in your experience as an immigration attorney here in Georgia, how does that square with what you see day to day?
Yes, actually, I wanted to express my appreciation for the organizations, nonprofit organizations that are actually able to represent on a low bono or pro bono scale. And we're very grateful also for this lawsuit, because not only is it important, but it also draws attention to this issue. Representing detainees, on one hand, transactional immigration matters are, challenging and complex, but for an immigration attorney to not only take on deportation defense, but also detain deportation offense, and especially if it's like 2.5-3 hours away from where most practitioners reside, this is very, very time consuming. It's labor intensive. It's unpredictable. For me to represent a detainee, for example, in Stewart, which I have many times, I have to take off a day of work, block off an entire day just to have a 10-minute in-person conversation that I have to actually plan ahead in a fast-paced removal proceedings. And it's fast-paced because they're detained. This is very, very impractical for most private practitioners, but even for these nonprofit organizations that are really sacrificing a lot just to make themselves available. And even on top of that, to add insult to injury, they don't have the access that they should have. I mean, we have to jump through hurdles just to be able to get in the building. Honestly, it's ridiculous. If people realized how hard it is just to get inside and to talk to our clients, I don't even understand how we can call that actual representation.
One other thing that we know about from the normal course of the justice system in the United States is that there's this thing called habeas corpus, right? Like, we have a right to a speedy trial, or if we're detained by the justice system, we have to be brought before a judge very quickly in order to figure out what's going on. What's the case in the immigration system, though? Do people who are detained on alleged immigration violations at centers like these, do they have a right to have proceedings go quickly for them, or can they just sit there for a long time, Lisa?
Well, the Sixth Amendment, which guarantees the rights that you're talking about, isn't actually the constitutional amendment that's applicable here. What we're talking about here is the Fifth Amendment, because, again, immigrants who are in the country without permission are not accused of committing any crime. What they are standing accused of is only a civil violation, which is one of the arguments we make in this lawsuit, that there's no reason for the level of security protection, because the people that we're trying to meet with are literally accused only of a civil crime of breaking the civil law of the country, not a criminal violation. So ICE does try to expedite proceedings for people who are in detention, which just makes the need for representation that much more critical. When you think about the reasons that immigrants may be seeking to stay in the United States, for example, a fear of persecution in their home country, what they need to be able to present their asylum claim is information about country conditions, incredibly complex. In fact, the Supreme Court has recognized immigration law to be as complex as the tax code, really difficult. And yet, without representation, detainees are required to navigate this thicket on their own. And you can see why the success rate of immigrants who are detained is 10.5 times less likely to succeed in their petitions to stay in the United States if they have to continue with their case while they're detained. That's why bonding them out and getting them out of detention is such a critical piece of what SPLC is trying to do with our Southeast Immigrant Freedom Initiative.
Okay. So, HIBA, in the last minute that we have here, pending the Southern Poverty Law Center's lawsuit in this particular case, people who are affected by this issue, people who may be held on immigration offenses, or people whose family members may be held on alleged immigration offenses, what's the best advice that you can give them to make sure that they have adequate legal representation? What can they do to protect themselves?
I mean, this actually impacts all of us. We have detained people that are detained a lot of times indefinitely, it feels at least, because the judges struggle. Sometimes they have to remain impartial, and if they're not represented, they need to be able to represent in a way the respondents, because they aren't represented. And so we actually just all of us need to be aware that we are amount of time and resources it takes to resolve these cases for unrepresented individuals, it would be drastically reduced. We could save countless tax dollars just to be able to move these cases forward. And actually, if we can help make sure that people that don't have representation, don't have access to representation, enable them to achieve that, if there is a way for awareness to help in that regard, that would be great. Obviously, retain counsel. Don't underestimate that these are complex areas of law. And so make sure that you have representation if you're detained. But even if you're not an immigrant, just understand that this is actually something that could be of help, not just to the immigrant community, but also to us as taxpayers, because it can move cases along and definitely aids in expeditiously, hopefully also, in making sure that everybody's constitutional rights aren't violated.
That's Hiba Gallup, an Atlanta-based immigration attorney. We were also joined by Lisa Grable from the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is suing U.S. immigration authorities over, among other things, practices at two Georgia immigration detention centers. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.